Under federal law, outside political groups cannot coordinate with presidential campaigns. But watchers of the political scene are noting that Republican strategist Karl Rove met in Aspen, Colorado yesterday with Ed Gillespie, a senior strategist for the Mitt Romney campaign. It was a closed-door meeting, so we may never know if they broke the law by discussing internal campaign plans. The two men go way back. In 2009, they co-founded Crossroads GPS, which is raising big money and putting it towards ads like this one, which may sound familiar to viewers of this week's Olympics.
The worst economic recovery America has ever had.
Tell him, for real job growth, stop spending and cut the debt. Support the New Majority Agenda at newmajorityagenda.org.
The newmajorityagenda.org is one of the many arms of Crossroads GPS. It and other conservative groups like it will collectively spend roughly twice what Democrats and their fundraising groups will spend in this year's election. Their success is largely due to Karl Rove, who's credited with reinventing the business of political finance in the cover story of this week's Bloomberg Business Week. The story's author is Paul Barrett, an assistant managing editor at the magazine. And Paul, big money groups have been a force in politics for years. So would you explain what's new about what Karl Rove is doing?
We've been concerned about big money in politics, as you say, for many years. But this issue changes shape and form over time. For example, in the 1990s, we were concerned about what was then known as soft money. That was money that could be given in unlimited amounts by both corporations and labor unions directly to the political parties as a way of getting around the legal limitations on how much you can contribute directly to a candidate. Well, we had reform laws that were passed in 2002, the so-called McCain-Feingold laws, and those put up a wall blocking soft money from going to the parties. In response to that, campaign finance engineers came up with a new route for getting unlimited money into campaigns. Those were the so-called super PACs that developed, or if you're a fan of the tax code, the 527 groups. And it was liberals who first exploited that opportunity in the 2004 election, attempting to unseat George W. Bush and put John Kerry in the White House. They were quite successful on the financial front, raising tons of money, a lot of it from liberal rich guys like George Soros, the hedge fund manager, but they didn't succeed at the polls. John Kerry, of course, was defeated by George W. Bush. In 2008, there was a slightly different dynamic. You had now President Obama, who was an amazing fundraiser, who turned down all public money, and so his ability to raise money was unlimited by the public campaign contribution overall limits. Rove and his colleagues, after seeing the Republican disaster in 2008, said, we have to use this available technology, the super PACs and a different kind of group called social welfare organizations, or 501c4s, if again you're a fan of tax code parlance. And what they did is they took the methods that Democrats had been using them and they amped them up. And right now they are far ahead in the fundraising arms race.
And where does the U.S. Supreme Court's 2010 Citizens United decision factor into this? That, of course, is the ruling that cleared the way for unlimited donations from corporations and unions.
Well, that is the conventional wisdom, that it was Citizens United alone that cleared the way. In fact, the way was clear for unlimited corporate and union contributions before Citizens United. What Citizens United did was it provided kind of an accelerant to a process that was already well underway. It cleared away some very particular rules that had to do with spending in the period just before elections. And most importantly, it didn't actually change the basic ground rules. What it did was, it was a pronouncement by the Supreme Court majority that political spending not only was not an evil, but that it was good, and that there was no reason to fear that unlimited outside spending, whether by corporations or by labor unions or by wealthy individuals, would corrupt the process. And this seemed to liberate people like Rove, who were in the business of raising this kind of money, to do their work more effectively, more efficiently. And we now have sort of a complete absence of shame connected to this, because the Supreme Court has said it's just fine and dandy.
Paul, you said that liberals first exploited this. And in fact, that is the very same argument that Rove makes. He says, I'm only doing what the Democrats have been doing for a long time. How fair is that claim? Is it really the same thing?
Yes.
It is.
Yes, it is. I mean, I'm not offering that as a partisan response or defense, as Karl Rove is. I'm offering it as just a dispassionate observation. Liberals, when they were trying to unseat George W. Bush, came up with an organization, a 527, called Americans Coming Together. And in its day, it was the leading such independent expenditure organization. It was very, very effective. They did a great job raising money. They just didn't have a candidate who could bring the ball over the line, as it were. This time, you've got conservative activists who have a president in the White House who they want to kick out. And all that's happening now is that Karl Rove and his minions are more successfully doing what everyone is doing.
And why are they more successful? Why are the Republicans raising so much more money? Is it that Democrats don't have as many wealthy donors? Is it that they're not selling their candidates as well? Or is Rove just better at this?
Well, there's a little bit of almost everything you're saying, but I think the place to start is who's on the outs. The challenger is always, as a psychological matter, at an advantage when you're going to a billionaire and saying, look, write a check for $1 million, or these days, $10 million. We've got to stop this guy. We've got to put these ads on the air. The candidate himself, either because of legal restrictions, can't do it by himself, or because of matters of taste, he doesn't want to go completely on the attack, go negative. We can do this from the outside. Write the check. Stop Obama today. Karl Rove is actually a genius at motivating a certain set of extremely wealthy people, many of them based in Texas, where he made his career in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and they happen to be very, very motivated at the moment.
Paul Barrett, in your article for Bloomberg Businessweek, you have Rove acknowledging that this new system we have tends to weaken political parties and strengthen outside groups. And he says he would rather have stronger parties. But you quote him saying, I'm focused on operating within the system we have. So he's basically acknowledging that we've created a monster of sorts, that it's a problematic system. What do we make of Rove himself acknowledging that?
Well, I think now you're getting into a realm where you might raise an eyebrow. Because, I mean, Rove obviously personally has profited and benefited from this whole system. I mean, he's been able to become what I would call the effective CEO of the Republican Party outside of the party structure because of the way things have evolved. It's important to add here, though, that President Obama ran for office and since being in office has expressed a lot of skepticism, even disdain, toward big outside money. He, in effect, discouraged people from competing with Karl Rove and his colleagues until relatively recently, at which point it became impossible for the president to continue that, and they've started up super PACs supporting the president. The Republicans have not held their nose over this the way President Obama did, and that gave the Republicans an additional advantage.
Paul Barrett is an assistant managing editor at Bloomberg Businessweek. He'll be back in a minute to talk about where these political groups are spending all this big money they're raising. And later in the show, in the aftermath of Penn State, the NCAA is moving toward tougher penalties for sports programs that break the rules. Back in a minute, here and now. Welcome back. We're talking about a cover story in this week's Bloomberg Business Week called Karl Rove. He's back big time. It's about how Rove has reinvented himself as a top-earning media personality after limping away from the White House in 2007 and how he's redefined political financing since then. The article is full of information about the 61-year-old Republican campaign mastermind. We read that Rove honeymooned on the Isle of Capri this summer with his third wife and socialized there with the likes of gambling magnate Steve Wynn, who used to be an Obama supporter until Rove won him over as a top donor. And we learned that Rove draws no salary or official title from Crossroads GPS, the political group he co-founded to beat Democrats at their own money-raising game. But as one donor says, what Karl says goes. And Crossroads GPS and conservative groups like it are on track to spend twice what Democratic groups are this campaign season. Paul Barrett wrote the article. He's an assistant managing editor for Bloomberg Businessweek. And Paul, where does most of the money being raised by these groups go? Is it mainly used for buying political ads?
Yes, the vast, vast majority. I mean, they spend a certain amount on infrastructure, meaning polls, databases, analysis, and so forth, but the vast majority of the money goes to creating the ads and buying the time primarily on cable television.
Then to what degree do you think is the money buying these ads the reason that the presidential race is now so close?
I think that's very, very hard to say. I mean, what you have is a situation where certainly an incumbent president with his inherent advantage in terms of getting attention for almost everything he does and says, almost everything his wife does and says, you know, that's a huge step ahead for the incumbent. And the fact that Romney has been able to keep his anti-Obama message in front of people, as you signaled at the top of your piece, has to have helped Romney to some degree. Also, you know, it's important to remember that this is like a football game. If one side is on the offense, is on the field more, it keeps the other team on the defense. If Romney is contesting states at this preliminary stage by running lots of ads in a state that otherwise might be a solid Democratic state, that forces the president's forces to go there and spend money and so forth. So some of this is kind of like a war of attrition as well.
Paul, in terms of how effective negative ads are, we read about a recent NBC Wall Street Journal poll that found that the few positive ads out there, no matter which party they're from, don't have an effect on independent voters. Yet President Obama's toughest negative ad against Mitt Romney, the one where Romney sings America the Beautiful off-key as the narrator talks about him outsourcing jobs and his foreign bank accounts, that one had a dramatic effect on independent voters. It resulted in a 13% increase in the number of independent voters inclined to support Obama. Yet because of these negative ads, both presidential candidates have had their quote-unquote very negative ratings soar to all-time highs among voters polled. So do negative ads work?
The people who spend their lives and careers trying to get people elected are quite confident that they do work. And as a result, we're going to have plenty of them. And particularly on issues such as foreign policy, which we've been engaged in for the last week or so as Mitt Romney has been overseas, where in many cases there actually isn't a huge difference between the positions of the two candidates. You're going to end up with people talking about patriotism and integrity and these personal qualities that tend to be at the heart of negative advertising.
Paul, this election season, all this money and all the ads that money pays for isn't aimed at turning out diehard conservatives as it was in the 2010 midterm election. So who is the money and advertising aimed at?
I think the main target for the super PACs on the Republican side is the voter in the middle, including the voter who may have supported President Obama in 2008, but now is very anxious about the fact that the economic recovery is so weak and may be worried about their jobs and about the overall sort of direction of the country. It's an effort to capitalize on voter disappointment more than it is in shrill hostility to Obama. That while there's a lot of negative advertising, in fact, it's in many ways softer negative advertising this year than it was in 2010 when they were going after Obama.
Softer because they think independents would be turned off by more heavy gunning.
That's exactly right. In the midterms, it was an effort to throw red meat to the base, motivate the base, and make sure that they got out to vote. There's less concerned about that because of Obama being on the ticket. The base will be out, and Rove and his buddies see think that it's actually going to boil down to peeling away some people who voted for Obama in 2008 and getting them to vote for Romney. They actually think that's the key difference. You know, it's difficult to bring across because the ads are so negative, but they actually tend to appeal. If you study them closely and watch a whole bunch of them one after the other, you notice the theme is more one of disappointment in Obama. Like, I thought Obama was going to be good, but everything's been bad and getting worse, as opposed to he's a, you know, commie socialist, closet Muslim. I mean, you know, it doesn't have that kind of tone.
That is really interesting, isn't it? It's almost the psychology of it.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
You don't want to turn people off, but if you just tap there, again, you sense of being let down. It's very effective.
That, and if you look even at the characters in the ads, the actors they're using, it's not so much right versus left. You'd have a hard time stereotyping the characters. It's very much kind of soccer mom and dad. And then it turns out soccer mom and dad are just like really worried about the economy and Obama made these promises and the promises are not being fulfilled, which is a different tone from 2010.
Paul Barrett is assistant managing editor of Bloomberg Businessweek. His cover story, Karl Rove, He's Back Big Time, appears in this week's issue. Paul, thanks very much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And this note on the presidential campaigns, Mitt Romney and President Obama are both reacting to the jobless numbers out today. White House economist Alan Krueger says the news that employers added 163,000 jobs in July, which is the best hiring pace in 5 months, is evidence that the economy is recovering. But Romney says in a statement, quote, "We've now gone 42 consecutive months with the unemployment rate above 8%. Middle-class Americans deserve better." Still ahead on the show today, the new documentary Craigslist Joe, about a 29-year-old man who lives off the generosity of strangers. News is next, here and now.